Good morning and welcome to Local Matters Health Matters, where we spotlight key health issues and community concerns across the Upper Cumberland. I'm Dr. Emily Lee.
And I'm Dr. Jennifer Mabry.
We're professors at the Whitson Hester School of Nursing at Tennessee Tech University. This May, we're recognizing National Speech, Language, and Hearing Month, a time dedicated to raising awareness about communication disorders and the importance of early intervention, access to care, and public education. As communication plays such a vital role in every stage of life, this month serves as an important reminder to support those facing speech, language, and hearing challenges. Joining us today is Sarah Johnson, a local speech language pathologist from Dialogue Speech Therapy Services, here to share her expertise on how speech and language issues impact individuals and families, what signs to look for, and why informed care and access, especially in rural areas like ours, matters so much. Sarah, thank you so much for being here today.
I am so excited to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
So can you start off by telling us a little bit about yourself and how you got started in the field of speech language pathology?
I am a local from Cookeville, Tennessee, and used to be a classroom teacher. I taught at Prescott Central Middle School, 5th and 6th grade language arts. And I got married, had kids, started staying at home with my children to just be mom. And through the phases of life, I had a little notebook where I wrote down all the different words that they would say and the things that they would do from day to day that just fascinated me. And I was just being a type A OCD mom. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so and just thought that was cool. Didn't know anything about speech language pathology. Yeah. Just what I did, baby book. And then my brother-in-law ended up being diagnosed with colorectal cancer. So it metastasized to his brain, which affected his speech. Mm. So I went to go visit him one day when he was at the hospital in Nashville and walked in and there was a lady working with him. So we just walked in and sat in the seats and let them do what they were doing. Mm-hmm. And I sat and watched fascinated because she was teaching him to over-exaggerate what he was saying so that he could increase his intelligibility and people could understand what he was saying. And I just sat there with my mouth, to the floor thinking, that was cool. Mm-hmm. What is this? So then she finished and they left. And I sat there and I said, who was she? What does she do? Because that's what I want to do. That was awesome. And so then as time went on, a few years later, I started grad school, got my master's to be a speech language pathologist, and then here I am today. And that's about 9 years ago.
That's an awesome story.
Yeah.
So that's a really neat background. So
you never know. I mean, you just never know what you're going to see or a healthcare worker out you're going to see that might influence somebody else.
Yeah, so you have no idea.
That's a good story.
Yeah.
Very true. So what inspired you to open Dialogue Speech Therapy Services, and what sets your practice apart from others in our region?
Well, so life has changed a lot since
9 years ago.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say since COVID, actually.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah.
And so caseloads for speech language pathologists are huge.
Through the roof.
Huge. Yeah. And so to see all the little kiddos that need help and love and growth, we work our hinies off.
Yep.
And as age does what age does, we kind of get a little bit tired and just exhausted.
Yeah.
So I was needing to change my pace so that I could have some more duration, endurance.
Work-life balance.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so
you could be a better practitioner.
Yeah, absolutely. So that I could provide better services.
Absolutely.
And then not walk out like a zombie every day and then go home to my family totally taxed.
And empty.
Yeah, yeah. nothing more
this.
To give. I've been pulling communication out of little ones all day long, and I do not want to talk to you. Or, I'll go to your ball game, but I don't want to cheer or, whatever's going on.
Which is not your personality.
Not in the least. So being able to start my own place allowed me to make the changes that I would like to make if I had my own practice.
Yeah.
And just, you know, have some balance. But then also my setup is a little bit different because I don't have insurance contracts. I'm only private pay.
Okay.
So that allows flexibility because I'm not mandated by what insurance says, yes, you can do and
no, you cannot.
Mm-hmm. And so when families come in with concerns and you can see that there are things, yes, we could address instead of saying, but insurance will not approve that, then we can, you know, make it a plan and work on that.
Nice.
And then I also had the idea that I would be a great, like, in-between because clinics that do have insurance contracts have really long wait lists.
Mm-hmm.
6 months is a pretty short wait list. It's, you know, a year can be a year and a half. So
and so much can change in a small child's development.
So much change.
Within 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just thinking,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yes.
when we talk about developmental stages with children.
Yep.
So I can't imagine.
Well, and so those motor pathways just kind of become more concrete in the wrong direction,
right.
you know, without the intervention needed. So I kind of thought, okay, we have lots of wonderful clinics in this area and mm-hmm. lots of wonderful speech therapists in this area. But it's going to take a while to get in there. So I can be kind of be that in-between person. You can come to me while you're waiting on that wait list. We can work, target the areas that need to be targeted.
Yeah.
And then whenever they call you and say, hey, we've got a spot for you, then you say, great. And you're not a year, year and a half, 2 years behind
right.
where you know.
So you're filling a gap
would be. Yeah.
here in this rural area. Because,
yeah.
you know, when I think of Upper Cumberland, where the residents are listening, what you do provide is a very specialized service.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've had patients that drive an hour and a half to Cookeville, Tennessee, you know, for speech because there's like we consider our area rural. There are even much more rural places
that
do not have anybody available at all.
Well, in
so
the 14
drive.
Counties of the Upper Cumberland, I think Clay, Jackson,
Pickett,
mm-hmm. Overton, White.
And beyond Jackson County.
Clay,
you know, yes.
above.
Okay.
You think in Morgan County?
Yes, I think it is.
Yeah.
Van Buren. Yes.
So, you would be it.
Mm-hmm.
That's impressive. Okay.
Yeah, very significant. So, walk us through a typical day in your work as mm-hmm. a speech-language pathologist.
Okay. So, I work primarily with pediatrics.
Okay.
That can be 18 months or 2 years until whatever. Right now, currently, the oldest child that I have on my caseload is 18.
Okay.
I was working with a 35-year-old, you know, recently. And so it never, you know, then you never age out. But I will start, and most of our sessions are 30 minutes.
Okay.
A lot of the younger kids, that's about what they can handle. Sometimes it's a little bit longer. Sometimes, you know, we're working to get to that 30 minutes. But I will see a kiddo with just articulation delays. And so those are that's what speech therapy is probably most
known for
is those R's, you know, when kids say wed instead of red,
mm-hmm.
you know, or walk and roll instead of rock and roll.
I gotcha.
So I may have that where we're just working on an individualized speech sound or a few mm-hmm. different speech sounds. And then the next 30 minutes, I may be working with a little one who has great receptive language, so what they understand skills, but they have really low expressive language, so there's not a lot of words that they are saying. So we're just trying to build that expressive language component.
Okay.
And then I may go to a kiddo the next 30 minutes that communicates with an AAC device, a communication device, because their expressive language is impacted negatively by a variety of things. Could be autism, could be, you know, brain injuries, could be Down syndrome, just all kinds of different things.
Yeah.
So we will work on communication with that.
With the device.
Yes, with the device.
All right.
And then we may work on social skills and pragmatic language. So that language that we use back and forth in conversations and mm-hmm. does my facial expressions match what I'm saying and my body language. Like I may say, I'm great. But if I say I'm great and my hands are down to the side and my face is all like droopy, I'm not great. It's not and mentioned. So it's understanding, yeah. But not everybody picks up on that. And so just working on, you know, on that. So it is, it is a little roller coaster loop-de-loop all day long. It's always changing.
Day.
It's a busy day.
So how many days a week are you open?
I see patients 4 days a week.
Okay. And your office here in Cookeville?
It is. It is. Now I'm contracting with one of the local school systems to help with their testing in one of their schools where they're just, the caseloads are high and they just need some more help. And so I was able to work out some time to where I'm just helping them to evaluate kids and decide, you know, okay, yes, these kiddos, they need some help, or nope, these are some other interventions. So I get to be a part of an IEP team to help these kids.
And for the listeners, most of them probably know what an IEP is. But what is an IEP?
It is an individualized education plan.
Okay.
So they are needing some extra supports in the classroom to be successful. And so
that's where you can come in.
We can come in.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So are you just assessing those children and saying their needs, or do you actually do the treatment as well?
So currently I'm just assessing them. We're just meeting the needs. Doing what I can do to help with them. So right now I'm just doing assessments and we'll see if that changes in the future.
For the school system. But now at Dialogue, you do?
I do everything. I do my evaluations. I write my plans and then I implement the plans on my one man.
Okay. What about staff? Is it just you? Are you a one man show?
It's just me. I'm a one man show.
All right.
Yeah. John.
And so if patients or families are needing appointments with you, do they just call your office?
Yep. Just reach out to me. If you are wanting to go with someone that has insurance contracts, a clinic that has insurance contracts, you would need a referral from your pediatrician. But with me, since we're not doing that, you just call me directly and we'll set up an appointment and come in and chat about what's concerning you.
Okay, that sounds great. Well, Sarah Johnson, a local speech-language pathologist, discussing speech, language, and hearing in the Upper Cumberland.
Sarah Johnson is our guest on Local Matters, Health Matters. We're talking National Speech, Language, and Hearing Month. I'm Dr. Jennifer Mabry.
And I'm Dr. Emily Lee.
Nursing professors from Tennessee Tech University. Sarah, May is National Speech, Language, and Hearing Month. What does this month represent for professionals like yourself, and why is it important to raise awareness?
I think that it is important because we get to showcase all the different things that we do.
Mm-hmm.
Like I mentioned before, you know, people think, oh, you work on speech sounds, you know, WED for red, but we do so much more than that.
Mm-hmm.
So much more than that. There's feeding therapy. You know, people say, oh, my kid is just so picky. Well, there's likely a reason for that other than they're just picky because they're wanting to be difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can assess that to see, you know, is there a biological reason? Is there a sensory reason? You know, then we can work on that, which that area really fascinates me.
Same.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's
like it's my own child. So my oldest,
he
couldn't do mashed potatoes.
Okay,
the texture. Mm-hmm. And I thought he was just being a difficult
child.
But we didn't know this before. So, yes, that's very fascinating to me,
well,
too.
Well, in tongue ties, what we consider tongue ties as speech pathologists and what primary care providers may consider a tongue tie and what an ENT may consider a tongue tie and how – it affects different things.
Mm-hmm.
It's very different.
It is.
So some of our texture issues sometimes is related to a tongue tie.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, because just that.
It's interesting.
The bolus movement and, you know, all
it
that.
It makes sense, though.
Yeah.
Well, and I think of breastfeeding, too.
Yes.
With that. Because, you know, that's where, as providers, healthcare providers, I think of, that's the first thing I think of is tongue-tied with they're not latching or not feeding
well. Feeding issues.
Yes. And so, if, you know, and those babies, oh, they fed well, so there's not a tongue tie. Well, when you start digging a little bit deeper and getting more details,
they fed,
but it wasn't always necessarily well.
Like
mama never felt great. And so there's a reason, you know, to
that's
that sometimes.
Thing.
So are you always
assessing the mouth whenever you when you first meet a client? Is that like one of your first assessments?
That is one of them, yes. Now, sometimes we may have to build a relationship with a child.
Okay,
because that's a very safety, security in their face kind of area. And their only experience with that is in the doctor's office where, you know, they've got that wooden tongue depressor.
That's why we save it for last.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
I call it a pokey stick.
Yeah.
I have no pokey sticks in my hand is what I tell kids.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, no. And so it's scary and you're coming after me with this light and this, you know, wooden thing in my mouth and that's a lot. And they're not feeling well a lot of times. And, you know, so sometimes it takes a little bit of relationship and trust. Before they will allow us.
Feeding, therapy, what else?
Feeding, so cognition, our, you know, what we can
process,
learn and process, our memory. Mm. And so we don't, you know, think about that with our senior population. Like that would be a great time to work on some cognition, you know,
and
kind
memory.
Of things.
Do you see more of that since the pandemic? Because, you know, that is a – I don't know if that's a myth or if it's a truth, as far as cognition and being focused and being able to understand communication because face-to-face communication was shut down for almost 2 years.
Yep. And then just you don't understand or realize how much you pay attention to those facial features for understanding. Yep. I can remember I was at the hospital during all of that and I tested my hearing. 3 different times because I was like, I thought, I have a hearing loss because I cannot understand what people are saying. And I've been reading lips and didn't realize it.
Oh.
No. I have
you really
great
did?
Hearing.
Okay.
Not
great.
A problem. We depend on those facial expressions, those lips to really
interesting.
Yeah, increase intelligibility and understanding and all that. So, that was something. The receptive language, so our comprehension, what we're understanding, executive functioning skills, which goes along with ADHD so many times and autism so many times and different things that we can do to help the brain to regulate so that it can regulate the body so that it's ready and prepared for learning. Because if your brain is kind of bouncing all over the walls, you know, inside, and so it's hard to pick up and learn when it can't focus and concentrate. And so just working on that, you know, regulation component, that expressive language. So, yes, how we say our sounds, but then how we're communicating with those longer, more appropriate, you know, phrases and sentences and grammar and all the different areas that goes along with that, communication devices, there's airway and how that impacts.
That's what I think of. So when I think of a speech therapy pathologist, I think of somebody in the hospital testing for swallowing.
Swallow studies.
You know, that's what I think
those
of.
Those are so interesting.
I mean, but that's, you know, that's my background.
Yeah.
And for the listeners out there, if you've been in a hospital and you've had a you know, a family member that's had to have a swallow study done because they're worried about them choking.
Yeah. We are those patients, zero.
Yes.
We can tell them, it is safe for you to eat and you can eat whatever you want to.
This is
not going to bode well for you.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many
hearing. That is not one of my areas, but I have a wonderful friend who is one of the best. And so,
so if somebody
cochlear
comes to you,
implants, yes, it's
okay. Yeah, because there's lots of people with cochlear implants.
Yeah, and hearing aids and just traumatic brain injuries, and the list goes on.
It's a much longer list than anticipated.
It is from the top of your head to the middle of your
diaphragm.
Yeah, so that's our scope of practice.
Wow. So what should people know about speech, language, and hearing issues and how they can affect someone's daily life if left unaddressed? So
I'm going to speak with the things that I work with. How
perfect.
About that? Because we also have voice, like I didn't mention voice, and, you know, the list goes on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I'm working with primarily pediatrics at this time in my life. So going with unaddressed concerns, we are allowing – okay, this is where I really, nerd out a bit. Ready?
I want you to. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Bring in the nerd.
And I'm going to use words that I don't use daily because nobody ever understands what I'm saying. So it's like, why even use them, right? So I just don't. Okay. So neuroplasticity, right? So our brain can grow. It can expand. The younger the brain, the more neuroplastic it is.
Okay.
The growth that it has. Yep. Now, it continues through adulthood. Mm-hmm. It continues forever. But it has the most growth when it's younger. So when kiddos are little and they're not communicating or not following those 1 and 2 step directions, you know, showing like comprehension, if we just say, oh, it'll get better. Oh, they're just a 3-year-old little boy. Oh, they just have lots of energy.
Or they'll grow out of that stutter.
They'll grow out of that. Yes, stuttering. Yes. Then you are allowing those pathways to drive, you know, like we're driving through a field. And the first time when that green grass is tall and lush, you know, you drive over it once, you can kind of see, but it doesn't really stay. But the more you travel back and forth on that field,
it leaves a rut.
Yes. Mm-mm. Okay. So that is a path to the wrong direction, that is hard to overcome, and it takes a lot of work to overcome.
Sarah Johnson is with us today. Thank you.
Our guest today is Sarah Johnson from Dialogue Speech Therapy Services on Local Matters, Health Matters. I'm Dr. Emily Lee.
And I'm Dr. Jennifer Mabry.
We're professors at the Whitson Hester School of Nursing at Tennessee Tech University. So let's go back to, we've talked a little bit about some things that you see and treat. What are some of the early warning signs that a parent or a caregiver should watch for in a child who may need speech or language services?
Well, language starts as soon as the babies are born, really, because their little brains are taking everything in, really, in utero. And so all that we are doing whenever we talk with them and make faces with them, that's practicing, you know, that exchange of communication. Mm-hmm. I make a face, you make a face. You make a face, I make that face too. Mm-hmm. And then we both laugh. So it's creating a lot of what I call like iceberg skills. So those things that are under the water, but are so important before that expressive language comes out, which is the top of the iceberg, right? So all of that is super important. And then around the first year is typically when that first word comes to light. And, you know, we have the cooing and the babbling and the noises that we're like, oh, he said mama. He said mama. She said dada. Look, I knew I was her favorite, you know.
Exactly.
And it's like, I hope, and we, you as a mama can consider that, and you as the daddy, you can count that and write that down in your book. However, I am the speech language pathologist. I'm going to say it might have been just gas or noises or, you know, whatever, but that's fine. However, around 1 year is typically when those first words come. And so if you are at 18 months or 24 months and there's not really any words or just a few words, I would look for just some professional advice to say, hey, is there something I need to be doing here? Because the leap of that expressive language is huge in those ages.
Yeah.
So 1 to 5 words around, you know, that 12-year mark.
Yeah.
Around 18 months, they're going to have an average of 10 words, up to 50 words. Around 24 months, they're going to have an average of 50 words, up to like 150 to 200
big
words.
Ranges.
So it's huge. It just jumps and it just, you know.
Exponentially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By a whole lot. So then by 3 years, you know, you're going to have around 250 to up to ish around 1,000 words. So it's enormous. And so at 2 years, we kind of anticipate kids are speaking in 2-word phrases, my ball, dada shirt, you know, just those simple little phrases. Okay. 3 years are going to be 3-word phrases. Puppy go down, you know, 4 words. Phrases around 4 years old, five,
that's
and it just kind
remember.
Of grows.
Yeah.
So general rule, you know, we're not hard and steady to those numbers and things. So if you see that your kiddo had several words and then around 18 months to 24 years, it just kind of stopped or regressed.
24 months.
Yes. What did I say?
Years.
24 years.
Yep,
it is not 24 years, 24 months.
No, I'm with you. 18 months to 24 months. Yeah.
So if they stopped or you saw a regression.
Right.
So let's probably get some professional, you know, assessment, yeah. discussion going on in mm-hmm. here, because people think, oh, well, they'll just catch up, or, right. oh, it's fine. My kid didn't talk till, you know, or they were four, and my cousin's kid, you know, their first words was, look at that house, you know? Right. And so, yeah.
Do you think that if they have siblings that it delays their speech because the siblings speak for them?
So that is one of those myths that I would say needs to be debunked.
Okay.
So typically.
Right.
And that's a very generalized term, mm-hmm. typically, mm-hmm. you know. So kiddos are monkey see, monkey do. And you can oftentimes put a kid with a group of other children and they're going to watch. And we think of peer pressure as being negative, but there's also positive peer mm-hmm, pressure. Yeah. You know, they're in that environment. They're
socializing.
Yes, mm-hmm. they're hearing other kids talking, and they're like, oh, mm-hmm. I want to do that too. So a lot of times they pick up on right. what is being said.
Okay.
Now, if the older sibling is very domineering, it doesn't ever allow that child to speak for themselves, a more like meek and timid kid may just kind of sit back and let them, but typically they're not going to. They're going to want to say and do, you know, what the other kids are doing
okay.
in their family.
Yeah. So yeah. there's lots of information out there, whether it be from other individuals, but it's lots of information online these days. And like you said, some of it's accurate, some of it's not. So we've talked about some myths. We've talked about, you know, having siblings. Are there other myths or misunderstandings that you want to clear up?
Well, so here's one that we think baby talk is cute and like, oh, those little mispronunciations, gosh, they're just so cute and they'll grow out of it. But like I referred to earlier, those motor pathways, the longer we practice the wrong way, mm-hmm. the harder it is to correct that a lot of times.
Yeah.
And so there is a cuteness to it when it's age appropriate, but whenever mm-hmm. it is no longer age appropriate, mm-hmm. you know, 2, 3, 4, it's like, okay, that was cute. But now is a bit of a concern,
yeah.
and we're going to have to work on this. And so we think about, too, going into school-age mm-hmm. kiddos.
That's exactly where I was going, yes, with preschool.
You know, mm-hmm. and so
we're
moving on to that, mm-hmm. and then we have the kids have to start so early with so much, you know, they are reading just as fast as they can. And, right. you know, so much that they're expected to do. Spelling comes along in kindergarten, which it used to be just play. And now we're spelling and phonics and all of that, which, you know, they just have to do. So if I am saying my sounds wrong, I'm going to spell my words wrong because we start with inventive spelling,
yeah.
which
yes.
is so fun. You write a word like it sounds, and so it's so fun to see how their little brains, you know, write
right.
the words and things.
Mm-hmm.
However, that goes into, you know,
that pathway.
Yes, and it goes into complications yeah. with spelling, goes into complications with reading, because if we're saying it differently, then we're, you know, spelling it and reading
it. Is dyslexia part of that as well? You know how they're they mm-hmm. see things backwards, or
yes, backwards
they
reversed, and
okay,
yes, and that's. That's a booger in and of itself,
okay.
too. Yeah. That takes a specialist.
A special specialist.
Yes, yes.
I kind of
yes.
like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, specialist.
So there's lots of myths and misunderstandings. Well, are there a few pieces of advice that you could share how families can tell the difference between solid professional guidance and unverified advice? How could they tell the difference?
Well, I would say if you see a solid professional,
mm-hmm. yeah.
then you could probably rely on their information more heartily than just,
advice.
Yes. You know, and data is always changing.
Always.
Information is always changing.
Yes.
And then we also have our own experience and, you know, the patients that we've seen. And so we also develop our opinions and what I've seen. And so I will try to say what I have seen is XYZ.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The data shows and what I was taught is, you know, XYZ. And so
right.
we really kind of have to take all of that.
And each person's different.
All together.
Yes. And I agree.
So different.
Yeah.
So different. Well, and that triggers a thought for some myths as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So everybody's autism. Not.
Yes.
There's a phrase that's very commonly used. If you've seen a person on the spectrum, mm-hmm. the autism mm-hmm. spectrum disorder,
right.
then you have seen a person right. on the autism spectrum disorder because it is
one person.
One. It is so diverse. And so a lot of times people, when they have limited exposure to that, then if you say autism to them, well, their brain goes a completely different direction mm-hmm. than a person who
right.
might be in healthcare or healthcare working with pediatrics because, you know, older adults and yeah. or when you're working with older adults in healthcare, you don't always see the spectrum of autism
no.
like
You'll
speech therapists
the
or occupational
right.
therapists. Yes. And so it's
ones.
Just
yeah.
so different. Or now the phrase instead of higher functioning.
Oh, okay. What is it?
So now it's the autistic person has a higher level of supports.
Oh.
Or
I
a
gotcha.
Lower level of supports
right.
needed.
That's the yes. new phrasing.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That makes sense for the listeners.
Thanks mm-hmm. for clarifying.
Yeah. Thank yeah. you for clarifying.
You're
that.
Welcome.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't create that.
No,
I'm just sharing the information.
But you helped share the information.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
did.
And helped
and,
us learn.
You know, I learned.
Yeah.
Me too. So what should families in rural areas like the Upper Cumberland region understand about accessing quality speech and language services? Because access to care is huge, especially
it's
in a rural
huge.
Upper Cumberland.
So rest easy, Upper Cumberland.
Yes.
You have wonderful speech-language pathologist here to help you and your child and the needs that you guys have. However, because they are so wonderful and because we do support such a large area, the wait lists are a little frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're talking about diagnosis of autism, that referral is sent in, and typically it's going to be a year mm-hmm. and a half, 2 years before the appointment comes along for that developmental evaluation to say, yes, this child yes. has autism or not.
A long time to wait.
Then a referral likely is going to be sent for speech therapy if that is an area of need. And so then we're going to have another probably 6 months to a year to a year and a half for wait on a wait list to get mm-hmm. in for a speech therapist. So they're are some areas that you can look for to
access care.
Yes, access mm-hmm. care. That's
fill the gap.
Where my practice kind of tries to come in and help fill that gap and just to see what we could do to get support.
Because speech therapy
needed.
Is in the schools.
It is in the school system.
Right. So that a public school system will have that.
Yes.
At least that beginning area to let the parent know there may be an issue.
Mm-hmm.
There may be something we need to work on. As we observe National Speech, Language, and Hearing Month, let this be a reminder to pay attention to communication milestones, seek help when concerns arise, and support individuals of all ages who may be facing any speech, language, or hearing challenges. Awareness and early action make a difference. Building a healthier, more informed community starts with conversations like these that we've had today. Thank you for tuning in to Local Matters Health Matters. Until next time, take care and keep the lines of communication open.